So we're still expecting Liz and CZ, but I think we'll kick off and well, they can just join us. So welcome, Dave and Margot. Oh, yes, thank you. Yeah. So what we tend to do, we've kind of slipped into this, haven't we? We used to just do a light meditation, but we've started exploring more and more Buddhist concepts and ideas, and it's been quite nice actually. So I hope you enjoy it. And this week we're going to examine chaos. I find this topic, it's been a real good teacher for me right through my Buddhist practice, and well, hopefully you'll see why, and you'll take this away, because it can be very powerful. It's a little bit different. It's, you know, the previous few weeks we've actually been looking at some of the Buddhist defined terms, if you like, and we've been investigating a big text actually that's in Buddhism called the Abhidharma, which sets out a whole bunch of mental states actually that you can be in, mental objects. This particular topic is more, I would say, on the experiential vipassana side. It's kind of what arises in meditation. It's something that I found and therefore use in my meditation. So you won't find this particular topic described in any of the Buddhist texts. This is more about experience from meditation, if that makes sense.
Is that Western's interpretation?
No, it's just a general experience thing. So I wouldn't say, and it's a personal experience thing, if you like. I'm sure others have found this, but I really came about it just by looking and watching, actually, and. This came up. We had a weekend away in the Lake District, and we were camping in a teepee, actually. No, it was a yurt.
Yes.
Up on the hill. And I was just meditating one morning and just looking out the landscape, and that's where this arose from, actually. And it came from nature, just looking at nature. And For some people, this is quite a controversial statement, what I'm going to say next, but if you take a close look at nature, you find the natural order of things is chaos, okay? I'm going to put that out there. It does get challenged. The physicists tend to dive in and go, hang on, I don't agree with that, because if you look at the underlying nature of nature, you find mathematics, and that's true. That's true. But they also know that sitting behind nature is the law of what's called thermodynamics, which is mathematics based, but actually states that the natural endpoint of everything is entropy. And entropy is the natural behavior of all things to follow a process of degradation and running down a trend to disorder. Okay? So, QED. But, you know, the order of thermodynamics actually explains why things always move from hot to cold, for example. Things always cool down. They never naturally heat up. Even the sun is cooling. So, but that's the science. So we'll park that now and talk about our real experience, because this is what I found when I was looking at this scene. And when you look at the natural state of things, you see chaos. And the best example of this is the forest. When you look at a forest, you know, a natural forest, not a man-made planted forest, but a natural forest. The trees clearly aren't in line. They're all in a very natural state, very haphazard. And the floor below is covered with a complete mix of vegetation. And if you try to walk through it, it will be quite challenging. You'd get pulled by the brambles, and you might trip over the roots and this sort of thing. So very difficult to get through that forest, to penetrate it. But if you also look at that forest, you'll find animals in the forest, including us humans. Oh, here we go, somebody else. And both the humans and the animals have a common desire, and that's to bring order to their experience. We all do that. You know, even the bird song, you can pick out patterns in it, and I'm no expert on bird song, but what I understand is that they're calling for mates, they're talking about, hey Azizi, they're talking about food, and they're warning each other of danger. So actually there's a lot of chaos there that can affect their lives, but they're using their bird song to bring some sort of order into that, unknowingly perhaps. And of course us humans, we're really good at this stuff. So despite that chaotic nature of the forest, we cut paths through it.
Perhaps that's why they sing so well, they try and cut out all the chaos in their life. And
well, yeah. So we clear paths and we name things. So we try to understand the plants and animals, so that we can draw interpretation around them, models of behaviour, all of these things, just so we can make sense of that chaos and we try and bring order to it. I mean, our language is hugely complex when you think about it, when you compare it to a bird's. And it allows us to express information and convey models of interpretation about literally everything. But if you think about it, if you take that explanation away, so you're just looking at the raw picture without any interpretation on top, what you find is chaos. So moving on from the forest, we come to people. So people, wow, there's a complex topic. So people are hugely complex, infinitely complex, actually. If you look at every single one of us, we are so very different. And then if you think about, okay, you bring two of those infinitely complex people together and try and make a relationship, you could never predict what's going to happen because, wow, who knows what's going to arise. Yeah. however, us humans, we do it again. We try to bring order into that chaotic picture. So we start to form models or ideas of different humans. We try to bring some sort of structure into our experience here. And the clearest place you can really see this is in workplaces, in our modern offices and organisations. And there we give people role descriptions, job descriptions and responsibilities. So we put ourselves into boxes. I'm a project manager. You're a clerk of the court, that sort of thing. These, of course, are artificial. They don't really describe the person. What they do is describe the job they're doing. I can't think of many situations in a work context where we actually describe the person. We always describe the job. There are different types of modelling where we do describe the person, of course. You know, our modern psychotherapy techniques, things like this. Yes, we do. We give people labels for different types of behaviour. Our person's an angry person. There we go. But again, you know, these are not describing, they're not really grabbing the full complexity of that person. I'm putting them in boxes again. I'm not actually saying this is a bad thing. Okay. Actually, it's quite the reverse. It's rather clever, actually. It allows us to exist in large, complex communities like towns, for example. If it was just chaos and we didn't try and put structure around it, it would all fall apart. And we're not the only creatures to do this, actually. If you look at ants, tiny little ants, they have different roles. You have worker ants, you have soldier ants, you have the queen, and they've got their individual jobs to do. I'm sure they don't use words to describe these things, but in their own way, they know what their job is, and they stay within that role, mostly. Mm. Pheromones, I think they use, don't they?
You wouldn't notice. No. Oh, sorry, yeah, pheromones, yeah.
So, and actually, you know, it's a wonderful thing to have, and we have to have it. And I always come back to the real example of the hospital. You know, hospitals are phenomenal places, and that it's just the concentration is about doing good. I know we tend to, in this day and age, diss the NHS, but we have a wonderful health service, you know, and they look after us, and you've got a whole team of people over there all pulling together. You know, even the cleaners are working to support the staff to keep the job going and help us. And all of that could not work without those role descriptions. It would literally be chaotic, everyone running around wondering what to do. But the issue here is that what we have to do, I think, when we're in these organisations is start to recognise that these role descriptions are not describing a person. So what you get is you get overlaps between these descriptions, or you get gaps between these descriptions. And where you get these situations where there's gaps or overlaps, things break down. And actually what happens is chaos creeps back in. Because it's the natural order of things, it will always try to push back in. You see it in cities, you know, we tend lovely manicured gardens and parks, but if you leave them for a couple of years, they'll revert back to that natural forest. And the same is true for us humans and our processes and the way we work. So we have to apply energy and effort to keep chaos at bay. And actually, where we get stress and anxiety and these types of things, where chaos creeps back in, because as humans we try and keep it at bay. So, all well and good, very interesting. How do we relate this to Buddhist practice? Well, we bring it into mind and we bring it into meditation. If we spend a little time in our actual meditation, we'll very quickly notice how chaotic our own minds are. You know, I like to think my mind is a very ordered place. I'm a very logical person and I take logical steps. But the truth of the matter is, it's not like that at all. You know, it's a jumbled mess up there, actually. I'm leaping around from tree to tree. Monkey mind is going crazy. And actually, that's to be celebrated, because it's out of that space where our natural creativity comes. And that's beautiful. So we should not push away our chaotic nature. We should embrace it. It's what makes us phenomenal. So what we can do in our meditation, and what we're going to do this morning, is spend a little time studying the natural chaotic nature of our minds, enjoying it, and actually learning to relax with it. And that's the key thing. It's about acceptance. Accepting the way our minds are. And I often talk about how we don't actually make progress on the cushion. We make progress when we go out into the world. What we do on the cushion is form habit. We're forming mental habit here. And this is one of the areas that we can look at that. So we can form a mental habit of acceptance, of accepting the way the mind is and accepting the chaotic nature. So when we get out there in the world, we do exactly the same with life. When we see chaos creeping in, yeah, we still put the energy in to keep it out, but we have more of an acceptance of it because we recognise actually that's the way it is. So our usual response to this when chaos creeps in and we see it is with tension. Tension, physical tension, mental tension sits underneath a lot of these emotions that we experience. So we study that. We notice our response to our chaotic tendencies, the nature of our mind, and we notice the tension and we mentally relax it. That's how we build the habit, so that we no longer fight against these things. We relax into them. In Tai Chi, we call this the yielding mind, and it's a real teacher. Often, what sits behind one of the emotions is fear. Actually, a lot of our reaction to chaos is fear. So look at that one, because that's a real good teacher, even if it's at a very small level. And often we don't like to admit we're afraid, but quite a lot of times during the day, if we start to pay attention, we discover fear sitting underneath, and that's fine, it's okay, it's a natural reaction. So we just look at it and go, oh, look at that, there's a bit of fear there, let's relax into it. And it usually transpires because the other person is not acting the way we expect them to, or the situation is not going the way we want it to, and our desire to keep that thing in the box is not working. So in our meditation, often meditation itself doesn't go the way we want it to. We don't quite feel zenned out. And it's really frustrating. Why can't I reach that lovely calm place? Why can't I shut my mind up? A large part of the actual Zen approaches to Buddhist practice is about pure acceptance. A big concentration of Zen is just accepting things the way they are, even the fear, the frustration, and the anger, and taking an interest in that. So this is what we're going to do today. So we're going to sit in meditation. I'll talk you through a body scan. Body scan. So it's we actually go into our bodies first.
Right.
And this helps to bring us into the place, if you like, into the moment. I'll talk you through. We'll start at the feet and work right the way up to the head top. And we'll go into each part of the body and study it. And even during this stage in the meditation, you can start to consider chaos, because you'll find thousands of tiny little sensations kicking off all the time. It's fascinating to pay attention to the body. During the body scan, we'll bring our minds to our heart and our gut. This is where our emotions live. The results of our emotions sit there. Look at the chaotic nature of those. Rarely do we have just one emotion sitting down there. If you tune in, find all sorts of things going on. When we get there, don't try and justify it. Don't try and understand it. Just go with the physical experience of the emotion. And so we'll do the body scan, and then we're going to come into the breath. So this will help to relax further. And we'll use the word still today. So you're breathing in and out, and just bring your awareness to wherever you can most feel the breath, either in the pit of the stomach or the back of the throat or somewhere, wherever it's most present for you. And don't try and visualize anything with the breath. Just go with the physical sensation. That's what we're doing here. What is the nature of the breath? And as you breathe, on each out-breath, just gently hear the word still echo in the mind and settle in the body. So words in meditation, very, very powerful. They help to draw us towards the place that the word is expressing. So still is a good one. And so we'll do that for a while. I'll ding the bell, and then we're going to let go of the word, still with a background awareness of the breath. Just bring your awareness to your mental experience, what's going on. Notice the thoughts that are coming through, notice the nature of them, notice your reactions to the meditation. You know, are you resisting anything? Are you feeling blocked? And when you do that, don't try and explain it, don't try and justify it. Just again, notice your experience and see if there's tension associated with it. And if there is, relax into it. And that's it, that's all we're going to do. Okay. What I encourage you to do is to take some homework for the next week. And after the meditation, obviously, you'll have experienced some of this and noticed some of the chaotic nature in your own mind. So then take some homework, and during the week, try to stay mindful. During your days, see what's going on. Notice all the times where actually your resistance to this chaotic order of things comes up. And just take a mental note and notice how it makes you feel. You know,
couldn't you just issue tapes to take things?
Well, yes. I mean, these I publish on the blog, actually, okay. So you'll have this.
Right.
You also have this talk, so you can hear it again. And also the meditation.
These people got a head start on
me. They have, yeah. So, yeah, just go with your week and see what comes up. And then we'll chat about it next week, if you want to. You don't have to. Okay. That sound good? All right. It's okay, so just relaxing down. Just experimenting with your posture a little. Just settle in and just finding out where you're holding yourself, perhaps, and just letting go. Check your spine. You do want quite an upright spine. It'll keep the mind fresh. That's what we want to be. We want to be fully present in our experience. And gently close your eyes. Have your internal gaze slightly downcast, as if you're looking just below the horizon, establishing a more concentrated sense of mind. Gently tune into the room around you, the feel of the space, gentle sounds that come, experiencing the ground supporting you underneath, nice and safe. And awareness of friends sitting with us, supporting our meditation. Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dhammaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Nama, Am Ham. And we take our minds into our feet. Feel everything, both inside and across the surface of the skin. Tiny little sensations, whatever you can find. Contact with the ground. Work across the soles of the feet, picking up any differences in sensations, up over the heels. Working up through the ankle bones. And into the shins and the calf muscles. As you travel, looking for any tension and releasing it, letting go. And working on up into the knees. Take an interest in everything, so any aches and pains, have a look at them. Don't try and understand. Notice any tension associated with them. Emotional reaction. A desire to push away any pain. And instead, generate a feeling of acceptance. And we work along the thighs and the hamstrings. Feeling the hands resting on them. Contact of clothing. And then up into the sitting bones. Relaxing and settling into the seat. Feeling the safety of the seat supporting us. As we sink and settle, allow the head to float up a little and just feel the spine stretching out, easing out. Strength comes into the posture, and a sense of fresh intent to stay with the practice in the mind. Take your awareness into the stomach and heart space. All our emotions manifest in here. This is the seat of our emotions. The physical sensation of them. Don't try and understand them. Just experience them. What's going on? How do you feel? The awareness comes up into the shoulders. Feeling any tension there, letting it go, letting it drain out. And then we travel down the arms, down the upper arms, over the elbows, down the forearms. And into the hands and the fingers. And back up to the head. Even across the surface of the scalp, there are sensations. Temperature. Little tiny sensations firing off. When we come into the face, imagine a compassionate gaze, that soft feeling behind the eyes eases out tension in the face. Half smile on the lips. This compassionate gaze we're going to offer to any tension that we find in our meditation. Accepting it and softening it. Now bring all of these sensations in the body together. Awareness of everything, including your emotions. Sitting in this space with friends. This is our life in this moment, right now. Anapanasati mindfulness of breathing. Bring your awareness to the breath. Gently noticing the breath wherever you most feel it. In the stomach, back of the throat, tip of the nose. Wherever it's most obvious to you. And settle with your concentration there. Let thoughts go, just the breath. And on each out-breath, hear the word still, echo in the mind and settle in the heart. Still, just the breath. mind wanders, just bring it gently back to the breath. Let go of the word, still with the background awareness of the breath. Bring your awareness to your experience. Try to stay outside of the thoughts, the stories that they generate. And just notice the nature of them. Notice the nature of mind. And experience your reaction to it, how you feel. Relaxing into tension.
Well, thoughts are not your experience. They're just thoughts. Stay outside of them. Look at your experience of the mind and rest with it. Noticing mental tension manifesting as physical tension. Accepting and letting go. relaxing your concentration. Bring your awareness back into the room, experiencing the space around you. Just tune into how you feel. And offer yourself a resolution to take this experience of mindfulness out into the week. To try to stay present and mindful during the days, experiencing the interplay of the natural order of things, chaos, noticing how it creeps in, noticing your response to it. Like ripples in a pond, we make a difference. Om Mani Padme Hum. When you're ready, open your eyes and bring your meditation to an end.